Chapter 20. During that summer of 2070, as Joshua Valiente endured a sabbatical that had become a stranding, and Dev Bilaniuk and Lee Malone glimpsed the future of mankind at the Grange, Nelson Azikiwe undertook a long journey of his own, a long stepwise journey, despite the discomfort of stepping itself. But it was worth it for Nelson, for he went in search of a grandson he had only just discovered existed. Despite his elderly eyes, Nelson was one of the first to spot the storm approaching this living island, this traverser. He was sitting on the soft, pale sand of the island's north beach, or rather, on the sand-covered flank that this island-like creature chose to present to the low northern sun that morning. The traverser, which Lobsang, its discoverer, had chosen to call second person singular during Nelson's first visit all of 30 years ago, was always in motion, always responding to currents and breezes, to the cycle of the seasons, always underway, following its own imperatives. The sea stretched before Nelson, small waves lapping at the shore, further out, placid and flat, and a deep, rich blue. Placid for now, anyhow. This was the Tasman Sea, and somewhere to the east was New Zealand, or rather, an uninhabited footprint of the Datum Island group of that name. This balmy world was 700,000 steps west of Datum Earth. And above the island, patiently station-keeping under the control of its onboard AI, hovered the small two-person twain that had carried Nelson all this way. Sleek, glittering with solar energy panels, the twain was a reminder that Nelson did not belong here, that his own home was far distant, around the curve of the planet, and many steps away along the mysterious chain of the long Earth. But for now, here he sat, on this beach that wasn't a beach, with his son, Sam. A son he hadn't known existed until a few months ago. Sam was 29 years old, almost as dark as his father, naked to the waist and looking as fit as a decathlete. Now he squinted up in the air.
"Your ship moving. No storm coming."
He pointed north. "The storm is coming. Never mind." Since he'd arrived at the island, Nelson had learned that as he'd grown up, Sam had always been made aware by his mother, an island-born woman called Cassie, that his father was not one of the other men of the island, but had been the handsome, clever fella who had visited all those years ago and, only once, had walked into the jungle with her. Cassie had done her best, with the limited resources available to her, to give Sam enough of an education that he would be able to converse with his father when Nelson returned, as Cassie always had faith that he would. She'd done a good job, and it wasn't Nelson's place to pick holes in the young man's grammar. And besides, Sam's native language was a perfectly respectable Creole, dominated by English, but laced with many other tongues. It was Nelson's failing that he couldn't speak the local language, not the other way around. Now Sam pointed, scanning his finger along the northern horizon. "See? Black smudge."
"It seems so far away. Harmless."
"Far, not harmless. Here soon. Skyship turned to face wind."
"If it needs to, it will fly up above the weather. Do we have to shelter?"
"Oh, island look after us. No worries."
And Sam meant that literally. Sitting here on this authentic-seeming beach, with the island under Nelson feeling every bit as solid as its geological counterparts, it was almost impossible to believe that the island was no island, no inanimate lump of coral or rock, but a living thing, evidently sentient to some degree, and capable of caring for the cargo of living creatures that dwelt on its back, including generations of human beings. Yet you only had to be here for a few days to observe for yourself that that was true. He was maundering again. Sam was watching him patiently.
"I'm sorry, Sam. Off with the fairies."
"Show you."
"Yes?"
Sam reached into the pocket of his trousers, an elderly pair of jeans, long faded to blue-white. He produced a small figurine and passed it to Nelson. Nelson cradled it, turned it over. It was a slim form carved in ivory. Well, there were dwarf elephants, even mammoths on this island, and when they died, they would bequeath plenty of ivory for such purposes. The limbs were mere suggestive scratches, but the face was a more detailed cartoon, and there was a splash of some red pigment in the hair. Nelson felt a warm shock of recognition.
Cassie. And she's smiling.
Yes.
She always did wear red flowers in her hair. I remember that.
It was as if Nelson was back in his study when that avatar of Lobsang had first broken the news to him about his distant family. He was a very old man, he thought, suddenly subject to the most intense emotional experience of his life.
I never meant it to happen, you know.
He glanced at Sam. He felt ridiculously embarrassed to be discussing such matters as his son's conception with the man himself.
Mother say she meant it. As soon as you show up...
Yes, yes, all right. And I was being pushed from the other direction too.
By friend Lobsang. I know story.
That's him. He implied it was almost my duty to get someone impregnated, as a donation to the gene pool of the island's human population. Well, in the end, it was love, Sam. Brief as it was, a singular moment as it was. Can you believe that?
Mother say so, always.
Despite Lobsang banging on about gene pools, somehow I never really imagined that anything would come of it, that she actually would get pregnant. That you might exist, let alone little Troy. Simply beyond my imagination. I suppose you can blame half a lifetime in the Church of England for that. If I'd known, I would have come back.
No.
Sam took back the ivory piece and held it tenderly.
Mother, no. Your life far from here. I was gift from you, she said. And later, little Troy. Father, when people die here, not bury dead like Angland.
He got the pronunciation slightly wrong. Angland. Nelson did not correct him.
We come from island. We return to island. Chambers full of living things, green and pink. There we lay dead.
Nelson imagined vats of life deep within the island's carcass, dissolving the corpses of its passengers. Humans, yes, and presumably the other animals that inhabited its surface.
It seems appropriate, he said gently.
We keep nothing of dead, Sam said. Not like you speak. No ashes, no stones on island. Wash away. Instead, markers. In chamber deep in island.
He looked down at the little figurine.
This, hers.
I would like to see that.
This travelling island had been sailing its stepwise oceans for centuries at least. That chamber of the dead must be full of little statuettes like this, rows of sketchy figures and smiling faces, the most antique peering out of deep generations.
You know, I was older than your mother by a considerable margin. I did not expect to outlive her.
She die 47 year old, a good age. Old go away smiling. Make room for lots more babies.
Like little Troy.
Like Troy.
Sam took his father's hand, his strong brown fingers wrapped over Nelson's rougher, liver-spotted flesh.
My mother saw grandson, happy and healthy. What more want?
And there was a deep booming noise, rich, resonant, like 1,000 bass-voiced monks chanting. It seemed to come from within the island.
What in Jupiter was that?
Sam stood and carefully tucked the figurine of Cassie back into his pocket.
Island call. Come on.
Nelson stood, stiff, after sitting too long on the sand. The booming continued, and he thought he could feel it through his feet, the island's fake ground itself vibrating. And he saw that the storm was a black mass of cloud now, piling up in the sky, the uppermost clouds streaming. Soon the clouds would blot out the sun. He blinked up at the sky looking for the twain, but it was already out of sight. Sam took hold of Nelson's hand again as they walked slowly up the beach. Nelson saw that the great lids were already opening, ridged discs, hinging up on tremendous muscles like the opening of giant oysters or clams, slabs of the chitinous carapace that underpinned the surface carpet of rocks and dirt and living things. Within the openings revealed, Nelson could see rough ramps leading down into chambers that glowed softly with a deep blue underwater light. And from all over the island, people were coming, men, women and children, some babies in arms, a few very old, and nobody as old as Nelson himself, all of them making their peaceful way down the ramps and into the island's interior. There was no sign of fear or panic. The adults chatted as they marched down the ramp and into the gloom. Older children ran around their legs, shouting, their voices echoing as they swarmed down into the cavernous inner chambers. People seemed happy, excited by this break from the routine. Nelson shook his head.
"They're like a crowd at a Christmas sale, or the way Christmas sales used to be."
"What, Father?"
"Never mind."
"Down ramp before animals come. And before storm."
Over Nelson's head, the clouds covered the sun. It grew suddenly dark, distinctly colder. And Nelson heard a shrill trumpeting sound. The mammoths were coming. Nelson felt a deep, visceral thrill. He let his son lead him down the ramp.